It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Mark Carman now at the Carm on Twitter. What a day for WGN Radio Sports, for sports fans, for Cubs fans. It'd be one thing if it was just celebrating the biggest moment in Chicago sports history, which was today with the victory parade. But there also was some drama and some tension at the UC tonight as two Chicago draft picks come back to Chicago. Two number ones, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, come back with the New York Knicks for their first game in a different uniform. Mark Carman, how are you, man?
I'm great, Justin. Thanks for having me. I am coming live from the United Center where...
What a long day.
I mean, I don't know if anybody cares about what's going on over there right now when the Cubs just had their pennant, or their world pennant, their World Series celebration.
You can't even get it right in your head.
Right? Did they win the World Series? Did that actually happen? I think they did. So, but it was a big night on the hard court, I guess, with Rose and Noah both back in town. They had a video tribute that they combined, so they'd go Rose highlight, Noah highlight, Rose highlight, Noah highlight, which was to the benefit of Derrick Rose because they love Noah, Bulls fans. But Bulls fans
really
just killing Derrick Rose tonight. Every time he touched it, at least for a good part of the first quarter, boo. Hardcore boos. I'm like, didn't this guy grow up here, the youngest MVP in the history of the NBA? Okay, he got hurt, and maybe didn't come back as soon as you wanted him to. But, I mean, come on. You're really hating him to this level. And I know he's had a rough summer off the court. But, by the way, found innocent on a civil case. And, overly told the truth on that one.
Beyond that, I can't see a chorus of boos coming off of a civil case that you know didn't have anything to do with basketball. What is it about the way that the Bulls fans respond to Derrick Rose? Is it the fact that there was all this potential, there was this moment, and the knee injuries, and he didn't come back, and all that kind of stuff?
I think that's basically it, right? They just hold him. Apparently, they hold him accountable for that group never getting over the top, right? That Noah and Pau and Taj and Jimmy, whoever else you want to throw in there, Lou Aldang back in the day.
Carlos Boozer.
Right, him too. That they never got over the hump. I mean, I do, you know, it's been 18 years now since Mike left. They've been to the Eastern Conference Finals once. It was with Derrick Rose. He had a game winner against LeBron the year before, not last, but the year before. They were up 2-1. LeBron hits a corner three, and then that basically ends that era of Bulls basketball, right. Really.
I'm fascinated to think about the villains in Chicago sports history when you think about guys, especially guys that are from Chicago that, Derrick Rose, and we've had this conversation before, but really was a poster child for the Chicago Bulls. He brought Chicago Bulls basketball back. There was that time with Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and that kind of thing where this is not getting out of the second round ever.
Right.
And Derrick Rose came on the scene, but what has happened to him since? I mean, it's almost, if I dare say, on sort of a Sammy Sosa level where there's some weird kind of fan hatred of Derrick Rose that's hard to understand.
That's not bad. I mean, and with Sammy, it's like, well, he cheated. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, he did, but you all went crazy for him when he was hitting 60 bombs three separate seasons. So it's just convenient how everybody forgets that when he came to the plate, they'd go nuts. Sammy. But now, I hate Sammy Sosa. Do you really? Do you remember how you were towards that guy?
Is it the same concept with Derrick Rose?
And with Derrick, right. I mean, he put the Bulls back on the map. The guy, in his first ever playoff game, he's up there with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar history-wise. He had 36 and 10 or 11 assists against the Celtics in that crazy seven-game series where Noah had the dunk on the breakaway. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was beloved, and he got hurt, tried to take care of his own body. People had huge judgments on that. And now he comes back, his first game back, and you're going to boo him every time he touches.
The team did a tribute video for him.
Yeah.
The team and Derrick Rose are on bad footing.
Right. Well, and so, you know, they're showing this video, and I'm like, is anybody enjoying this other than me? I mean, at least the Rose part. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I hold him to a lower standard than other people do. But I mean, to me, here's a kid that comes out of the inner city, is a genius at his craft, is, you know, before he got hurt, top 20 player in the world. So that's, I mean, that's probably more successful than you are at your job. He makes more money than 99.999% of us. He came from nothing. Most of us don't come from there. And to get to that level, to hold him on this, to judge him like he's this failure, it's like, if he's a failure,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to look in the mirror, you know?
Well, let's talk about what happened on the court. I mean, Joakim Noah also back. The Knicks they handled the Bulls tonight. And the Bulls started the season 3-0. They had a good look, and obviously no one was paying attention thanks to a Chicago Cubs run for World Series. But the last two games, we're seeing more of what we thought we would see with the Chicago Bulls, which is missing a lot of shots, heavy production from one or two guys, but not really playing team basketball.
No, but I'll tell you, this Dwayne Wade guy.
Yeah.
33 minutes tonight, 35 points, 12 of 20 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3. I mean,
which is way out of his average. That's not what we thought we were getting with Dwayne Wade. But why? What was it tonight that ultimately doomed the Bulls?
They couldn't guard. I mean, and the Knicks put up 117. Noah himself, that's his best offensive game I've seen him have in a while. He's finishing a ton of balls around the hoop that normally, at least in recent years, Joakim has no lift and can't even make a layup. He made a bunch of them tonight at 16, 7 of 11 from the field. I mean, last year, for a big man, even more pathetic, I think he shot 39%. So in the last game before this one, I saw he played 18 minutes, shot 0-2. So this was a big breakout for Joakim. He was extremely motivated tonight. I mean, he was a wild man out there. And I'm watching him walk off the court like I kind of waited in the tunnel when they come off. That body, man, it's taking a beating. He doesn't walk great.
And when he touched the ball, there were no boos?
No, they love Noah.
Wow,
love
so
Noah.
Interesting.
They love Noah because they look at Noah like he's a warrior. And they look at Rose like he's just soft, paper mache, all that. It's the Chicago
and
toughness,
even though Joakim Noah missed all last year, pretty much, with an injury.
Right, but they look at, I think Bulls fans look at that like those were real injuries, and Rose was just, you know, cleared by doctors, faker. And also, Derek, his words are...
He's not a wizard with... He may be a wizard with the basketball. Yeah. Not so much with the media.
Right. And Joakim was great with the media.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
He'd also throw out some great stuff about the Cavs and give us some sound bites that we wanted.
That, too. I don't know anybody who likes to go to Cleveland, that type of stuff. And then I play for the last guy. I play for the guy in the last row.
Yeah.
I play for the garbage man, the postal worker. I like repping this city, all that stuff. I mean, people hear that.
Now, Joakim Noah, obviously motivated tonight. Porzingis as well had a huge game. Talk about, you know, those are interior players, and that's been something that you think about with this new-look Chicago Bulls team. I mean, it seemed like they were banging bodies. It did seem like they were putting some balls back in the basket on the on sort of second-chance points. Is that going to be a problem for the Chicago Bulls moving forward?
I mean, I just don't expect the Bulls to be really in the mix. But I guess, you know, as far as what you're talking about banging down low, I mean, Robin Lopez is okay. I mean, that's...
Taj seemed to be kind of...
Taj...
Exposed a little bit tonight, maybe,
right,
with Joakim Noah.
I mean, those guys are super tight. And that's... I don't know what that was like for Taj to play against him tonight, but I'm guessing it was pretty uncomfortable. And you're exactly right, though. Outside of those two, I mean... Nico Mirotic ain't going to be mixing up in the paint. Felicio's not bad, and neither is as far as just pure physicality. And I guess Bobby Portis could get in there and be slightly physical, although in my mind he's a little undersized and doesn't have a position on this team. Because if you're going to play Taj and Mirotic at the four, well, then Portis is done.
Portis, right.
Right. So, I mean, the physicality is not going to be there. You know, and the other thing tonight, this Jimmy Butler character.
Oh, we didn't even talk about Jimmy.
I mean, he really wants to have that basketball in his hands, and when he gets it, the offense just stops. And he's, you know, Rondo will be dribbling, and, oh, there's Jimmy 1 foot away from him calling for it. Hey, Jimmy, perhaps, I'm sure that Fred Hoiberg's not exactly, that can't be how the offense is scripted. So,
interesting.
I still think Jimmy's got something to figure out. I mean, Wade, though, you know, you look at his numbers here. I mean, 35 and 10, that's impressive. But he was also minus 23, which I don't put a whole lot into that. But
What does that mean, minus 23?
When he was on the court, the Bulls were outscored by 23 points. By far and away the
is
most on the team.
Is he not playing defense?
He was not playing defense tonight at all.
I mean, he's on Carmelo Anthony, right?
Well, tonight he had Courtney Lee, and Courtney Lee didn't miss a shot in the first half, and he finished with he was 8 of 10 from the field, had 17. So he was a very, as they like to say in the old NBA nowadays, the NBA analysis, he was very efficient.
Mark Carmen in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Chicago sports. We have to wrap up today. Get your thoughts on the 2016 victory parade, but not just the parade. Also talk about this 2016 season and frankly, about the short term and the long term for the Cubs coming up. Mark Carmen in studio. We'll be right back. Big day in sports today, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, Mark Carmen in studio. Obviously, I mean, we were talking about the Bulls, and we'll leave that be because it's November. Really don't start talking seriously about basketball until after Christmas, right?
I'll just throw one little nugget out there. Northwestern played an exhibition game tonight.
Oh, it starts.
The Cats 89, Illinois Springfield 52. Just a name to throw out there that you heard on the Justin Coffin show first. Isaiah Brown. He's a short little point guard slash off guard. 7 for 11 tonight in his first game.
Let me ask you this. I mean, we saw.
And what was the name of the high school team they played again?
Oh, Martyr, don't need your negativity, bro. Don't need that negativity right now when Isaiah Brown goes for 18 in his first ever exhibition game on 7-11. I've got inside information that the Cats love him. Damn it. No one's giving
me
that cat knowledge, Martyr.
I think this is pretty good. You know, now that the Cubs have gotten rid of that curse, it's Wildcats basketball time. They have never been in the NCAA tournament. They're one of the only teams that haven't.
This is the year. I can feel it.
This could be, I mean, just think about what we're in the golden age of Chicago sports. Today, a tremendous rally. Pete and I were watching the rally on Fox, and then we turned it to NBC, then to GN. We were trying to figure out like where it was, because I personally thought there was a problem with miking the audience. Like they would say, "Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for whoever came up to this, to Anthony Rizzo," and then smattering of applause. But talking to you just before, that's kind of how it was.
Well, okay, so there was the stage, and then there was like this media area, and then there were all the people. I'm looking out, right, like everybody else. There is a sea of humanity.
Millions.
Millions. Yet, whenever anybody kind of got on stage, I was expecting these massive roars, and there was
like the old Bulls or the Blackhawks. When the Blackhawks, oh my God, when Patrick Kane gets called up, it's on.
Right. And there was none of that. So
that's so hard to believe. Why? Was it hard to hear? Was it why would you go stand in all those lines and get ready at 8 o'clock in the morning to go down there if you're not going to scream and yell every time they say a name you recognize?
Yeah, I didn't really get it. I was like, what's going on here? Why isn't there more? And then it just kind of, okay, we're all going to sing Go Cubs Go to a country song, and then everyone's going to go home and nothing. And then, of course, 5 hours afterwards, I came back to the station, then I take the L back up to Wrigley. I get off at Wrigley to get my car. People are hammered. They're having the greatest time ever. They're blowing horns. It's like it's a game day. I'm like, where was this downtown? You know, you all were there. And, people were walking around at 8 a.m. They're carrying their 12 packs of Bud Light just strolling down Sheffield. I'm like, this is going to be a wild day. Y'all are nuts.
So maybe they figured it out. If I want to get wild, I go to Wrigleyville. If I want to go downtown and just kind of do the golf clap,
yeah,
I'll go to Hutchinson Field.
I guess Grand Park was the golf clappers, but, I mean, that's a lot of golf clappers.
I know, and there's such a great tradition. I mean, obviously the Blackhawks have made it a very modern tradition, but when you think back to the Chicago Bulls and they would have those trophy presentations and rallies at Petrillo, and they'd introduce Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen or Phil Jackson, place would go crazy.
Right. It should have been like, Rizzo, Rizzo. Right. I mean, where is that? Give me a Dexter chant. Give me a Javi chant. Right. I was sitting there like, should we do this at Wrigley and just limit it to the 40,000 who actually are going to give effort here? There was no effort. Poor crowd effort today. I think great effort getting there.
I was going to say, but how was, when it comes to just the logistics and everything, I mean, there's so many people downtown today. I mean, from your vantage point as being a media guy and working through it, I mean, were the players just, were they taken care of? And secondly, could you sense the awe?
I don't know how you did it. If you didn't, like for me, I started in Wrigleyville. I was there super early this morning, and I had an outstanding report on Steve Cochran's show, and he screamed at me because I was telling him that, you know, there's no media parking. And he's just like, he thought that I was, you know, all about myself. And I was trying to actually mocking the media. But there's neither here nor there, Steve. Just
you've been waiting on that for like 15 hours.
Just crushing on me. So that was, and then, you know, so then I was on a rooftop down there, right? And all the double-decker buses are out, and it seemed like there was a ton of people down there. But so then I tried to go downtown to get to the platform. Well, I had, like, the media credential. So I was able to get through barriers that other people weren't. But it was, you couldn't go anywhere. If you got there late, you were not getting there. And so there was just, I mean, Columbus Drive was just lined with people, and Michigan Avenue was stuffed with people. So that sea of humanity... Yeah. And there were.
Well, I was down there. We did the little mini documentary we did at the top of the show, because where I was at the beginning of Lakeshore Drive, where they came off. So they come off of Lakeshore Drive and they're right there in front of Bloomingdale's and right there. To see it on their faces, you know, where they just were on Lakeshore Drive and they hit that sea of humanity, because if you look down Michigan Avenue all the way down here to the river and you're just seeing bodies and bodies, you could see like Dexter Fowler and Aroldis Chapman and even Joe Maddon just being like, everyone started pulling out their phones to be like, what is this? Like this, it was a moment for them.
Yeah, I think the parade route was the favorite for everybody. The Grant Park thing was completely anticlimactic. Okay, they're here. Now they're gone. Clap, clap. All right, let's all go back to Wrigley. And
there seemed to be, and it might be just the size of, maybe it's the size of the roster, but there is something with the Blackhawks that, you know, you see Foley and company just kind of going, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the captain, Jonathan Toews, and the place goes crazy. This was, Pat Hughes did alphabetical. So Jake Arrieta's coming out second. You're like, what? Wait, whoa. What is he up second? No one did a scorecard to put the stars towards the end?
Right. That wasn't particularly well done either. I love Pat Hughes. The man's phenomenal at his job. But when he gets up there and he's like, Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air. Like, we were expecting this big roar.
Yeah, right.
And it fell completely flat. Like,
I still believe there's amplification issues. I won't blame it on Cub Nation. I believe it was just bad microphone placement.
Hey guys, let me ask you this. You both were out there. I only saw it via the television. How fast were they going in those buses? It seemed to me that when they got to the biggest part, the biggest sections along the parade route, they were still going at a pretty good clip.
I will say this, from where I was at on Michigan Avenue, the whole thing was over in 30 seconds.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Because the first half of the parade was just executives and friends and family that didn't have any face recognition. It started with Tom Ricketts about halfway through. And you're like, here they come. This is going to be a craze. It's going to be like at the pace of like a Columbus Day parade or a Gay Pride parade, where you're like, here come the floats and they're moving, but they're just moving slow. Nah, they just like, they just roll through and you're like, there goes Rizzo. Oh, it's over. Cops.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, that's the vibe that I got watching it on TV.
It was a lot of waiting to see it for 30 seconds.
That's another thing. I'd like to perhaps take calls on the download all night on that. How do you actually make that much effort to go out there just for that 30 seconds where you wave? They have no idea who you are.
A million people there, yeah.
Yeah, they have no idea who you are. They don't care. And yet... you're willing to make that move just because you want to be a part of it. I think that's cool. That's beautiful.
To be able to see those heroes, the ones that you watched on TV, to watch Anthony Rizzo go by sort of waving in a general direction of you, there's something special about it. When you see an Aroldis Chapman or a Joe Maddon, or trying to think of like John Lackey and John Lester. Lester, Ross, and Lackey were on the back of one of the buses, and they were really the three with their cans of, their aluminum cans of Bud Light, you know? Like, they're just like with their hats backwards and their aviators on. There was a point where you could physically see John Lester turn to David Ross and be like, this is crazy. I think that's what he said. This is crazy. And to be that close and be able to see that, I think that's why people go down.
Okay. And at the end of the day, I mean, what else are you going to do? And there's all the connection right, of everybody else out there. You got all the Cub fans. I get it. It's just there's something about, I just feel like in some way the fans deserve more than that.
There are still people aimlessly walking around on Michigan Avenue. So that tells you that there was a tremendous amount of that all day. If you were outside at all, it was all day kind of, let's walk all the way down there. Let's turn around and walk back here. They were trying to get their money's worth. So
it's like the Walking Dead out there, man.
It was very Walking Dead. Mark Carmen in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get Rob Martier's update tonight. And we come back, let's talk about the highlights of the 2016 season. And I'm very interested to see if the Cubs have a shot at at some of the hardware. Of course, the Cy Young, MVP, Manager of the Year, Executive. And, of course, what are we going to do with some of the contracts and free agents? Mark Carmen in studio. Stay with us. They should get a Lil Wayne Cubs verse for this. You know, like he should do a verse just to make it really an authentic mashup. Mark Carmen in studio with me. We're talking about the big day in Chicago sports, little Bulls, a little victory parade. But really the story, of course, is the 2016 Chicago Cubs, a team that on Wednesday night finished it off in dramatic fashion, a Game 7 win. This team, I mean, as we sort of look back and we wrap up what this team means to Chicago, I mean, let's go right to the to where we left off in 2015, which was a loss to the Mets, and the decisions that were made in the offseason to bring in some parts obviously paid off.
Yeah, the biggest one was spring training, right? Nobody thought that they were going to get their leadoff man and their center fielder back, and then here comes Theo Epstein walking Dexter Fowler out, and Jason Hayward, who played like American Legion ball with him in high school, gives him a big hug, and the rest of his teammates go nuts, and then all of a sudden you've got your leadoff man and center fielder back, and it moves Hayward off over to right, which is where he should be. So that was huge. And, you know, John Lackey, a little veteran presence, yeah, pretty good year, too.
And he did show presence. I mean, he was a larger-than-life pitcher for the Cubs. I mean, he gave a lot of good performances throughout the year, but he was there when you needed him.
He had an excellent year. And he wasn't great in the playoffs, but that guy was worth the money all day.
And then the one we haven't even talked about, which is the World Series MVP, Ben Zobrist.
Oh, well.
And made a tremendous speech today about wanting to come to Chicago because this would top the experience he had in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's it's funny. I didn't even think of Ben Zobrist going through it. I thought you were about to say Jason Hayward. I'm like, we talked about Hayward. Oh, right. Yeah, Ben Zobrist, 4 years, $56 million, and they traded Starlin Castro, which was a huge move in the offseason for Adam Warren, who's now back with the Yankees, and in the old Aroldis Chapman flip around. So that trade, man,
well,
huge.
It shows, I mean, there's two things. Let's talk about Theo Epstein, because it shows two things. Obviously, the trade to get a lot of talent in the farm system, to bring that farm system, Addison Russell trade will always be known as one of the highway robberies to be able to bring him in. Also, you saw Kyle Hendricks for Ryan Dempster. Those stories have become huge. But you've seen Theo Epstein work in ways that we haven't seen past Cub management work, where free agency pickups are contributing in October, November, not to mention trade deadline guys. Mike Montgomery, Aroldis Chapman coming in at the trade deadline, that's how you pull to be able to get guys for the stretch run.
Yeah, and he's just opportunistic, right? Like, oh, Ben Zobrist is a free agent. That makes sense. How do we do this financially? Well, we're going to have to trade Starlin Castro away. Okay, and so we're going to get that done and take less for what Castro's worth just to get the money to work. Oh, we can go out and get Dexter Fowler, who will come. Well, I got to save money here because, you know, the finances, they're not as open, at least they haven't been, as, you know, maybe some people think. Oh, I got to trade Chris Coughlin and his $5 million to Oakland for nothing just to open up the dollars to bring in Dexter Fowler. So I'll do that too. He's just very creative, right? And he makes reasonable plays. Like, oh, 20, and it, I wouldn't have done this. And this is maybe his one mistake, but just the way he thinks. 26-year-old Jason Hayward's available. Right? Okay, this is a guy that plays great defense. He can run the bases, and he's entering his prime. Guys like that rarely become available, so let's make a play on Hayward. Jake Arrieta, this guy's got number one stuff. We're looking for pitching. I'm going to take a flyer on Scott Feldman, and I mean, that's unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about what it means. I mean, obviously, this team coming together, a lot of rookies from Jorge Soler to Kyle Schwarber to Chris Bryant, guys who've come up in the system and were brought up at this year. We saw it with Wilson Contreras, which was kind of a little bit of a surprise, but he came on and he became such an important part. This team is really stacked. I mean, to have a manager like Joe Mann to be able to move people around, they don't necessarily have three go-to outfielders. They have five. They have six. How do they balance when a Kyle Schwarber is healthy? I mean, are we going to see an exit because the World Series win is under our belts and they can't afford when these guys come clean? I mean, is it Blackhawk style when it comes to the Cubs?
Well, see, that's interesting too, Justin, because when guys are coming up and they're looking for an opportunity, well, okay, fine, I'll play all over and I'll accept my role. But now if you're Javi Baez and you've had success, you probably want to play every day. and Kyle Schwarber wants to play every day, and Ben Zobrist wants to play every day, and Jason Hayward wants to play every day.
Chris Bryant, right?
Well, right, and Chris Bryant will play every day. But so some of these guys, if they keep the team basically as is, they're going to have to sacrifice at bats and how and position too. Ben Zobrist came over here. One of the selling points for him was that he wasn't going to have to move around and he's going to play second base. Well, once Javi took off, he didn't play second base at all.
No.
So he's in left field. Well, where are you going to play Schwarber? Well, you're going to play Kyle Schwarber in left. So what are you going to do with Zobrist? Well, you're going to play him in right? Well, you got
to... I mean, you and me talking right here, you automatically think, well, someone's going to have to move. I mean, someone is going to get moved in the offseason. I mean, I don't think that you can... I mean, a lot of people would say, yeah, it's obvious. It's Jason Hayward. It's a big contract, and there's not a lot of suitors out there looking for a Jason Hayward deal. It seems like Theo Epstein may be stuck with a Jason Hayward. So what do you see this offseason when it comes to attrition or the idea of subtraction?
Well, I think a couple things could happen. Number one, I mean, my guess is that Fowler won't be back. So now you've got...
He sounded like it today. That was a see you later speech.
Right. I mean, I was like, is that about this? Or are you just talking about speaking? I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't even matter. Most likely the guy's going to be gone. And that's going to hurt because, I mean, they were a lot better with him in the lineup. So there are some at-bats out there. Can Albert Elmora Jr. step in and be an everyday center fielder? Probably not. So does that mean that perhaps a guy like Javi could be playing center
field? Could you move Jason Hayward to center like the plan was and then be able to do Soler and Schwarber on the corners?
And you could do that.
But then where's Zobrist play? Ah, oh, this is like a game. This is like a puzzle.
I think Soler will get traded. I think he's out. But I think you could do, in theory, Hayward in center and Zobrist in right and Schwarber in left. But it's not a very good outfit.
Where is... And we got to take a break in a second, but where is the weakness for this team? If you were Theo Epstein, you just won a World Series, where are you looking to improve? I mean, is it pretty much a stretch that Aroldis Chapman comes back? I mean, where are the spots that we may see some movement in the offseason?
Yeah. I mean, I think the back end of the bullpen is something they'll focus on. I also think they're always looking for pitching, right? There's another wild card out there, and I don't think they're going to trade Jake Arrieta. But Jake Arrieta is a free agent at the end of next year. Let's just say, hypothetically, things don't go particularly well next season. I don't think that'll be the case. I'm predicting them to repeat. But if they don't...
Trade deadline, you might see some chips, yeah.
Yeah, and you're talking about how do you move Jason Hayward. Well, when you deal a guy like Arrieta, and maybe you're not going to get a whole lot of value because you're dealing him at the deadline and it's a half of a season of control... Maybe you could package somebody like Jason Hayward with him if Hayward continues to struggle. I'm way out in front.
I was going to say we're way out. We're like, okay, so next year when the Cubs are out of it at the trading deadline,
right? Which is not
the day that they have the hit super the World Series victory party. I love it.
None of that's happening.
I love it. But none of it's happening. I love it. That's so good. All right, let's take a quick break. Mark Carmen in studio. We're talking Cubs. We'll wrap up. I'm interested in what your predictions are for the hardware.
All right.
All right. Stay with us.
Bye bye, curse of 45. Drive a goat on up to Wrigley and we'll let it inside. These good old boys are gonna give it a try. Singing, this could be the year the curse dies. This could be the year the curse dies.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank God.
We can put these away. What are you gonna do, Pete? Next year, you're screwed. All these songs are all about the curse and you know, Cubs finally winning. Now they won. There's not much you can do with parody songs at this point. Right. Mark Carmen in studio with me here as we wrap up. Coming up, Patty Vasquez will take over here at 11 o'clock. All right, so the hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously you don't count what happened in the postseason because that's a whole different thing. But, I mean, as of this moment, Cy Young, MVP, probably not Rookie of the Year, but Manager of the Year, Executive of the Year. What are you thinking for hardware for the Chicago Cubs?
Well, I think John Lester is going to win the Cy Young Award. I think that is he's got a great, great shot at it. And, I mean, Kyle Hendricks had a lower ERA, but I think overall Lester had a better year. I guess Max Scherzer is in there as well. But I think Lester is going to win the Cy Young.
Let me just say.
Yes.
If I were a voting member, I would take points off for not being able to throw to first base. I would say, I would just say it. I'm telling you, man. But they
got around it.
They did. It just we were talking about this the night of the World Series when you were in Cleveland. My wife watched the game for the first time. She got caught up in Cub fever, not into baseball. The text I got from her is like, why can't this guy throw to first base? I'm like, I don't know. I don't have the answer. It's psychological.
It's what's interesting too about the psychological part of that is this is a dude who thinks through everything.
It's so weird.
He's got a tight routine that he goes about every day. Total winner. But yet, he couldn't figure out how to throw to first base. Okay.
All right.
But
so say he's the guy. He's the odds-on favorite for Cy Young.
I think they get that award. I also think that Chris Bryant's going to win the MVP. So, I think the Cubs get both those awards. And Bryant, I mean...
Hard to argue with his numbers, yeah.
He hits for power. He hits 300. He runs, tag up, score, huge play, double to the corner, racing around from first. His attitude is unbelievable. Off the field, the dude's a prince. I mean, he's really...
Hard to vote against
him. I mean, this guy's like...
Who else in the league would be someone that you would look at in the National League for MVP?
Well, if you can...
In Colorado, the third baseman?
Well, you could start with Rizzo, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. That's one guy that you could
look
at.
Bryant's got better numbers, but...
Bryant does have better numbers. I think, let's see...
Bryce Harper kind of fell off because they walk him every time.
Bryce Harper was in the mix, I guess, for a little while, but that's not happening. Hold on a second.
I just off the top of my head, as a baseball fan and knowing those players, I can't think of anyone who's up at Chris Bryant's level.
No, hold on. Let me pull up one number real fast.
You can pull up while I ask you about
Bryant leads the NL in WAR at 7.7. So Nolan Arenado, Freddie Freeman are at 6.5. Corey Seager, the Dodgers, 6.1. It's just not going to happen. So I think Bryant's a runaway. Rizzo's fifth.
Yeah, the only stars in the National League that you can really point to would be Bryce Harper because he makes a difference in the game. You know, because he got to pitch around him. And then maybe after that, it becomes really hard. Buster Posey, maybe, because he's such an important part of that Giants team. But I can't think of
12th in the National League in WAR at 4.7. You know, 17th. That's kind of interesting in left is Addison Russell. That's kind of
had a great year.
Fowler's 19th.
Okay, wow. So when it comes to manager of the year, it's a long shot for Joe Maddon because he had such a stacked lineup.
Right. I think Dave Roberts gets it from the Dodgers. LA. Mattingly leaves, a lot of hubbub on that, and Roberts, they end up winning the division, and I think it's probably Dave Roberts. I don't know exactly. I suppose you can make a case for Dusty Baker too, but I don't think he gets it. He's won it before, so I think Dave Roberts of the Dodgers will win it for the NL.
And then in terms of, I guess, the other awards, hardware. You know, when I think of any of the other awards, I mean, Rookie of the Year, I guess Wilson Contreras, but he's not really in the running. Is he as sort of a part-time catcher?
Isn't Corey Seager's a rookie? Is he not?
Oh, is he not? Okay, so yeah.
So there you go. I think that's your Rookie of the Year with LA.
Well, it's an amazing year. I mean, to think about it,
they won the World Series.
It's funny because I wanted to kind of have an hour where we talked about the ups and downs of the Cubs season, but they won 103 games and then they won the World Series. There's not a lot of downs. I mean, there were a couple runs there, maybe in the middle of the season where they lost two or three in a row. But
you had me like research some games. I was going back through it, just looking at. I mean, they won on opening day 9-0. Just recall that they won opening day 9-0. I mean, that's just hello. And then Arrieta threw a no-hitter on April 21st, okay? They beat the Reds 16-0 that day, for the record. That was 9 starts after he threw a no-hitter against the Dodgers, which is that's the third shortest stretch. Got that note for you. I remember May 8th against the Nationals. They swept Dusty Baker out of town. It was Mother's Day. Javi Baez with the pink bat. In a 13-inning game, I was doing the beat on the weekend. I'm like, they're still going. I'm going to make it over there. I'm driving over to the game. Bias hits the home. I'm like, oh. I love extra innings. Anything can happen. There was the Bryant 5-for-5 game against the Reds in June. 3 homers, 2 doubles. Are you kidding me, Chris Bryant? You're insane. There was the Travis Wood play the outfield game, right? Woods, that was June 28th. He's in the outfield. Spencer Patton's involved somehow. And then Pedro Strop was playing left. And, that was a crazy victory that somehow they pulled out in 15 innings. And then I thought actually the biggest win of the regular season was the last game before the All-Star break, where they had lost five in a row, and they beat the Pirates 3-2. And that losing streak, and Chris Bryant had a couple huge hits in that game.
There you go. Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. Mark Carman, a tremendous year covering the Chicago Cubs, obviously, as well through the playoffs and the World Series. Get some rest.
And, thank you.
And start boning up on the Bulls, I guess, right?
Yeah. I got the beat tomorrow at 3, so a lot of the interviews.
It's must listen to.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of interviews to play. That'll be some good stuff. And that picture I put out of me and Rob Zastrzyzny,
on the ground.
Yeah, that interview. I'm gonna, when I replay that thing, I'm just gonna sit here weeping. So
there you go.
I'll do it at the end of the show.
That's tomorrow, 3:00.